All right, there we go.
You don't know if you did it right.
This week's episode, Rocket Science with Chris Rob.
Is it working?
I've clicked the red button. It's blinking. Does that mean there is recording happening?
What? Well, you know what? They'll know if they don't hear me at all. Chris was present for the show, but he did not. He forgot to put his headset on.
Well, you know what? We could sell that as a "you be the third member" of the podcast. Your empty spots will be where the listener will actually get a chance to talk.
Yeah, like a Mad Libs type
it's
of
like,
thing.
I was gonna say it's like a Mad Libs of Webcomics Weekly. That's nice. All right. Well, welcome to Webcomics Weekly. This is the part where Scott would read his pre-written little thing, as recorded via the Webatron, where we're talking about comics that are posted on the web for fun and profit. It's something like that, isn't it? What did he say?
Or whatever. Ah, that's good. That's the same.
Da-da-da-da-da-da. Like a song and dance song.
Boy,
and dance.
Already we're missing Scott.
already sad and lonely without Scott Kurtz of PvPOnline.com. But we have with us Christopher Michael Straub, latterly of Dallas, Texas.
Hey, what's up? What's up, you guys? How's it feel?
Feeling good. StarSlipCrisis.com, FChords.com. ChainsawSuit.com. And there in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, latterly of Doc Ock for Halloween, Brad Geiger.
Hello.
Evil-comic.com, fables.com with a PH, and courtingdisaster.gov. And I'm Dave Kellett.
Thank you.
Sheldon at SheldonComics.com. And we are Webcomics Weekly. And let's get started, gents. How is everybody doing?
Yeah, let's go right to the – yeah, it's been a big weekend over here. We've had the Phillies win the World Series. It's a – you know, we finally got the fires put out, and everybody's settling back in for a nice long winter.
I like how, and Brad, you and I were joking about this, but I like how a city winning and a city losing a major sporting event is virtually identical in terms of rioting.
Yeah, oh yeah. And Philadelphia does it, I think, like nobody else. When it started, it was really this warm feeling of a shared experience. I went out, I work right on Broad Street, which is the main street in Philadelphia, and I went out to the front sidewalk of the building that I work in, and I just saw people coming out of their houses, coming out of their apartment buildings. Everybody just wanted to be on the street. Nobody could stand to be inside. Everybody had to come out. And you had strangers hugging strangers and high-fives being exchanged and a little bit of, you know, yelling and rowdiness, but it was really amazing. It wasn't until later on when the beer really started flowing that this fire started getting set and the cars still started getting tipped. A friend of mine, and as a matter of fact, I don't know how much details I want to go into it, but do you remember the guy that we got to edit the How to Make Webcomics book?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this was the guy. Parked his car out on Broad Street, and a crowd came through and tipped it right over. In fact, I think if you Google Philadelphia Phillies flipped car, you can see it in action. Somebody caught it on tape.
Oh.
The funny part is when he called the police and the police sent a cruiser down to write up the report, another crowd came through and flipped the cop car.
I was going to say, wouldn't he just have to wait long enough for another crowd to come through and they'd tip it back over again?
That's like every episode of Gilligan where somebody gets amnesia. We just need one more coconut.
You get a drunk body shop owner. He'd probably hammer out the dance and everything.
Hey, look at this guy over here.
Hey, this is great. Bang, ping, ping.
It's called City Pride.
Go Phillies.
It's called
ping,
City Pride. This one's for the Phillies.
Very good.
But Brad, as I mentioned, went as Dr. Octopus this year. Chris, I didn't hear what you went for Halloween this year. What did you go
Guess with? What? I went as a big fat nothing. We just didn't do anything.
You didn't dress up?
Well, but look, in my defense, I had been planning to go as Tony Stark, and I was just going to buy one of those little counter lights from Home Depot and stick it under my shirt. Then
the
we
kind,
were like
the kind that you sort of press and then it turns on.
Yeah, and then just turns on. But but we had a really great party that night, and we invited people over to our new loft living lifestyle, and it was awesome. It was really fun. And you know what? None of them dressed up either, and they were worried that they would have had to. So that's the crowd I run with now.
So a party of losers.
That's
then.
How you run.
Yes, exactly.
That's how you roll.
Well, I remember, because, Brad, I don't know if you ever saw this, but one of the best Halloween costumes I ever saw was Chris and Erica went as Adama and Starbuck for, what was it, two Halloweens ago?
Yeah, it would have been two or three, yeah. No, yeah, two.
The best part of it, though, is that Chris does the absolute best Adama voice. What's that one line you always used to do?
Was it, I'm getting my men.
That was a great
costume. Have you had costumes where you, like, the following year you're like, maybe I should just do that again?
Yes.
I think my Dr. Octopus costume is going to be that costume, because I am right now trying to figure out how best to store it for next year, because it took so much darn work to get it done, and it looks so cool when I had it on that I've got it. I think I'm going to be Dr. Octopus. I think it's going to be like a tradition now. And if the kids, the only thing is, my kids are going to screw me up if they go as DC characters. It's going to throw the whole little Halloween universe on the sidewalk into tumult.
That's true.
Well, you would just be no longer on Earth Prime. You would be on Earth 2 or Earth 3.
Well, you'd have to play with the whole Marvel versus DC thing. You'd have to get one of your kids to go as Access.
I'd have to get, what I'd have to do is get Carolyn to dress up as George Perez.
Yeah. Dave was not there on that one.
No, you know what? I just realized that this is a podcast of nerds, for nerds, and by nerds. That's a ridiculous conversation we just had. I can't go as Dr. Octopus if someone happens to show up as Wolverine. That would be as a Green Lantern. That would be a tremendous crossing of the rays, as it were, to quote Ghostbusters. So what we'd need to do is... Sorry.
Oh, Dave. Green Lantern fought Silver Surfer in that one. He didn't meet him.
I remember the breakfast we had at Baltimore Comic Con, where, because I never really read the DC world, and Brad was explaining to me how they basically retconned everything with the Earth Prime idea, and I just thought that
right.
was the I just thought that was the cheapest way out of writing I've ever heard of.
Well, you know, I don't think that you can without getting too much into it. I don't think you can blame them that much, because really they've been telling stories since the 19... I mean, Superman goes, what, to the late 40s?
Yeah.
They've been telling stories with these characters for decades and decades, going back to the 40s in some case. And at some point, I think you need to be brave enough to just wipe the entire slate clean, even if it's something as hackneyed as wiping a universe... or bringing the devil in and wiping away years of continuity like they did with Spider-Man and Mary Jane.
Yeah.
I think sometimes you've got to be brave enough to ensure the future of the stories that are yet to come. You've got to be brave enough to say, okay, that was all fun for there, but guess what? Whoosh. Never happened. And it doesn't matter how you do it. It matters that you do it.
Yeah.
I agree.
I mean, on some level, you can't help but be sympathetic to the guys that come in with 40 years of continuity to write for or against, you know?
Right.
It's as if you were picking up Sherlock Holmes at the end of Arthur Conan Doyle's life, and he's like, all right, run with it. And you're like, boo, all right, well, is he dead or is he alive now? Is his older brother still kicking? Is he still a coke fiend? I don't know. Oh, God, what am I writing?
They did that, though, right?
I think Sherlock Holmes did coke, didn't he? Or
well,
snuff,
No. I mean, but Arthur Conan Doyle, he killed him off, and then they resurrected the character because he was popular, and they're like, oh, he didn't die. He's fine. Now let's have more adventures.
Yeah, well, Conan Doyle, at one point in his life, hated Sherlock Holmes and hated it that it was such a success, so killed him off and said, like, I'm going to do other projects. And then it very quickly became like, oh, going back to that, not making money on anything else. Okay. I was just kidding about Sherlock Holmes being dead. Let's have some new installments. He didn't fall off that waterfall. Hey, everybody, the fun continues here at SherlockHolmes.com. All right, that's what it would be nowadays.
Yeah, that was the only Sherlock Holmes story to start with. Wow, what a crazy dream.
Do you think that there's ever a danger of somebody doing that in webcomics? In other words, somebody getting so incredibly sick and tired. Let's say Scott got completely sick and tired of the entire PvP universe and decided to wipe it all clean and start with an entirely new cast. Yeah, do you think he'd have trouble doing that, or would it be something that maybe webcomics has a little bit easier job getting that sort of thing done?
I don't know that it's a question of whether or not the audience would be upset with a new cast. I think that they would be alienated by the disappearance of the other cast, you know. I will submit some proof as to that point. I think that F-Chords and Chainsaw Suit have found their own audiences, but they found them much faster because I had Starslip at the same time, you know. Now, if those had been my first strip, I don't think they would have found any audience nearly as quickly as they have. But I think if I said, guys, Starslip's over, and I'm going to do this new thing, I think everybody would have said, well, come on. We don't want that. So
that's a good
point. So I think that you wouldn't be able to really tell because you'd have the factor of everybody just being pissed off.
Not to float your boat, Brad, but I think one of the best ways I've ever seen that handled was the way you handled it with when you entered Greystone Inn and brought in Evil Inc.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of the slow transition of one, you know, you introduce a few cast members, they become increasingly more prevalent, and then you slowly, you know, dissolve the old cast and bring in a new cast around those new central characters.
Yeah, there was a period of about 3 months that I was updating the strip concurrently on both sites. Just because I wanted to kind of get people used to going over there, and for about 3 months the same strip was appearing at two different sites until finally I kind of weaned them off of Greystone Inn and said, okay, Greystone Inn is not going to update any longer. It's all Evil Incorporated now.
How did they take it?
At that point, after 3 months, at that point, I don't think there was anybody left at Greystone Inn. They'd all been, you know, because I'd keep saying at Greystone, hey, check out this blog post over at Evil Inc. Check out this new feature at Evil Inc. And I think at that point, most, if not everybody, had already kind of made the transition. And it was very easy at that point to shut Greystone down and make it just an archive site.
Yeah. Well, that's a smart way to do it.
Can I just tell you, too, I think this is the first time where we've clawed our way out of a rat hole, the rat hole being Arthur Conan Doyle, into a good point. So this is a... kudos to us, I think, for working our way out of Victorian fiction and into Brad moving to a new strip. I think that's great.
Actually, but wasn't there a parallel? So that did work very well.
I know. I was pleasantly surprised. Yeah. I think we're all quietly shocked that we were able to do that. So,
and you know what? And now for the next 20 minutes, let's just sit here pleased and quiet.
Well, I tell you what, you want to hit the mailbag?
Let's hit the old mailbag. Can I just tell you, while Brad's looking up a question, though, the one thing that I always... Did you guys see the...
Wait a minute, I'm not looking up. Stop
Well,
that.
All right, let me finish this one point, and then we'll go on. Did you guys ever see the documentary on Robert Crumb? I think it was just called Crumb.
I never did, though. I
never
wanted
did.
To.
No, I heard it was great.
You never did. All right, never mind. Let's go on to the mailbag. This conversation is moot. So going on to the mailbag.
Well, I mean, we know who he is.
No.
Come on, Dave. Keep on trying.
I tell you what, that'll get... Oh,
this
Brad,
is the part.
Caught,
this is the
that
part where,
me off guard.
This is the part where Brad rolls up his sleeve and shows the tattoo of that.
Oh my god! Oh, that's delicious. All right, so moving on. Here's our question for the week from Lou or Louis Manglass.
I like Manglass. I think that's awesome.
Manglass sounds cool because it implies both manliness and a brittle glassness that could be broken with a gentle word. So it's the mix of masculine and feminine.
You tell us, Lewis, if that's accurate.
All right, yeah. So, Lewis, Lewis, you go ahead and email in and let us know if that's how the family yeah. got started. We need something that implies our masculinity and our softer side. All right. All right, so here we go. Here's the question. Have you ever considered a webcomics trade association? Brad's still laughing, not at all listening to the question.
Hey, hey, if you break me, I'm going to cut you. That's how it works.
I'm just glad they put the GL in.
Oh, come on.
All right. Nothing.
Jumping back.
Nothing at all.
Nothing. All right.
Wow.
All right. So, moving on to the question. So, have you ever considered a webcomics trade association? Right now, there are scattered resources, some awards, and the occasional deal. Wouldn't it be great if there was a webcomics association that gathered a lot of these resources, awards, and bargaining agreements together for the common good? Also, we could do regional and even national conferences, or at least coordinate speaking arrangements at the currently established conventions. Of course, that would require work on the parts of officers and such, and I'm not trying to volunteer, but just wondering on y'all's take on it, especially given any other trade organizations you've participated in. So, Christopher Brad, I throw that question to you. Why are there no webcomics trade associations?
Wow. Let me answer the question. Do you think it would be a good idea? And that is no. I don't think it would be a good idea at all. And that is a very simple fact. And that is, if you ever try to get six people in a room to order pizza, you immediately find out that one guy doesn't like pepperoni, the other guy doesn't like sausage, she doesn't like cheese, he's lactose intolerant, the other guy has a wheat allergy. Before you know it, you end up ordering out for tomato sauce, and three of the people in the room aren't going to eat the tomato sauce.
But wait, so, but then we'd have tomato sauce at least, Brad. It's yeah, better
Brad,
than nothing.
Brad, don't poo-poo that tomato sauce.
I've had that particular brand.
I'm telling you, what you're talking about is it's an absolute anathema to webcomics. You're never going to get anybody to agree on what the right thing to do is. And if you put a substantial amount of time into trying, what you're actually going to do is find that your own work, your own webcomic, is going to fail because it's going to absorb all of your time trying to put this thing together. That is going to be useful for no one.
Yeah. I you know what? I almost think we should tackle the elements of his question one by one because I think each one merits its own response. So wouldn't it be great if there was a webcomics association that gathered a lot of these resources? So that alone, I think there's a couple good sites online where there's good resources that are gathered. One of them we're trying to build. And then the second one is, wouldn't there be a great webcomic association for awards and such? And for that in particular, I don't want to say I take umbrage, but I think it's a kind of useless to have webcomics awards per se. And this is just my own personal feeling, so guys, feel free to correct me if you think I'm an idiot. But I think that webcomics, given that they're just a medium, just a form of transmission, they are not a genre, they are not a style, they are not a form of writing or of art. They are all and any and above. It kind of does no good to just have a webcomic-specific award other than to kind of gather everybody in a circle and pat one another on the back, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
No, I completely agree. And the problem with that is, and I mean, that's not a bad thing in and of itself necessarily, but the problem with it is then you are now distracted by the completely generated and false what am I trying to say? Honor of these awards, because they've been completely generated by the same circle of people who are nominated for the awards. And
well, let me just throw this in real quick to prove your point, Chris. Who won the Webcomics Choice Award for last year?
I don't know. I don't know who won the year I won, because I think that's all anybody cared about is, oh, I did it, you know.
But that's just it. It's got no cash in.
Right. So, I mean, the whole goal is to find an outside organization that's willing to look at your work and say, okay, this is worthy of our award. You know, we have come upon it completely separate from this medium, and we like what we saw. You know, I could put myself up for an award, and it doesn't mean anything.
Well, and this is going to sound totally like hubris, so forgive me if it does, but I don't want to measure myself up against somebody who has 40 strips in their archives. I want to measure myself up against, the guys that have 20, 30, 40 years of work. I want when I'm 50 to have earned an award up against some of the greats that we know and love from cartooning history, not from in and among 30, 40, 50 people online that may or may not have been working for the last 6 months online, you know?
Well, and that's where I'm really thrilled to see the Eisner Awards with the webcomics category, the Harveys, I think the Ignatz Awards. Most of the major comics awards are recognizing webcomics in and of themselves. And that I can respect.
Yeah.
Those are awards that I think are worth taking a real strong tilt towards. Some of these others, I agree with you guys. I don't think it's as important. Now, having said that, I'll always throw my comic in because I'm always looking for one more way to get my comic linked somewhere.
Sure.
That's true. You know? Yeah, in the odd chance that it gets you a little link.
Yeah, and that kind of thing can be meaningful for a comic that's at that phase and is trying to build an audience.
Right.
But then after that. There's no need to be in it, and it's not that I hate awards, because I remember when the WCCAs were, it must have been 3 years ago, I was getting hopped up about it, and I was saying, you know what, I don't like the way that it's run, and I think I want to get on that board, and I want to change it and make it good, and I want to put a lot of effort into it, and then it was like, well, all right, I could put that effort into it, or I could put that effort into trying to build my business. And that's kind of
right.
A microcosm of what we're talking about in terms of this question in general.
Well, I guess that's what I mean, and that is that I'll always put my name in for an award like that, but to do the work yourselves as part of this great webcomics organization that's being posited here, I couldn't imagine that being worth anyone's time.
Right. But you know, I want to go back though, Brad, on one point, because it's a matter of small disappointment to me, is that the Eisners, which I think is along with the Rubin and the a few other awards, is probably the go-to award for cartooning. What's unfortunate about that though is that they recognize webcomics as webcomics, and what I would rather see is PvP going up against the best of, say, newspaper comic strips, and the Abominable Charles Christopher going up the best of graphic novels, or stories for all ages, or I'd rather see webcomics going toe to toe with the genre in which they compete, not the medium in which they work.
Well, no, I don't know. I think I disagree with that. I think the Abominable Charles Christopher, if he wants to compete for a graphic novel award, should put out a graphic novel.
Mm.
Well, that's a good point. I guess what I'm saying, though, is that the genre, that was a bad example. Let me try to think of a finished graphic novel. Let me change gears entirely. I would rather see a sci-fi strip going up against a sci-fi award, or good writing going in for a good writing award, good illustrative style going in for a good illustrative style award, rather than, hey, you know how to use a computer.
I don't know that PvP could not be entered for a best humor award for an Eisner.
Well, it was though, right?
Well, it was, but what I'm saying is,
that's
like
my
right
point.
Now, the Eisner only accepts web comics that are long form, complete storylines, as a unit.
Now, on that respect, you have an excellent point, and that is that if I want to compete with my comic strip for the best digital comic award, Evil Incorporated would not be accepted. Well, Evil Incorporated I actually could be accepted, but Fables, which was actually nominated 1 year, could not be nominated because they've readdressed that rule that says that it's got to be a long-form comic. In other words, it has to, if it updates over a period of time, it has to build one overarching story. It's got to be long-form in that respect.
Right. And what that does is that...
In that respect, that takes all your comic strips, or most of your comic strips, out.
And it takes out all the Far Side-esque gag strips, and it takes out all the editorial cartoons that are online, or all the political or cultural cartoons that are online.
Well, Dave, I think I understand what you're saying. You're just saying that webcomics are lumped into best webcomic. And that could be any number of...
And I guess to some degree, you could say, all right, well, best 32-pager could include all styles and types of comics, cartooning, and storytelling. And I could see that point. But it just seems to me like I would rather see really good webcomics writing going up against really good print writing rather than saying, all right, this strip cartoon, this gag cartoon, and this graphic novel online are all going to compete for the best webcomic, you know? They're pursuing different aims, and they're writing and achieving different goals, and it's only the means of transmission that they share, you know? Granted, webcomics are a nascent form of art and a nascent industry, and so, of course, there's not going to have, immediate acceptance into all form of categories. But I just think down the road that would be something that I would be happier to see if that were to happen.
I think you're going to see that addressed more and more, even as more of the larger publishers get further and further into webcomics, into publishing their stuff on the web. I think that's going to bust wide open in the next 5 years because I think everybody's moving there. And it's just going to be in everyone's best interest to have that kind of flexibility in the categories.
Right. But there's one other point to lose that I think, and this is really worth talking about because a lot of cartooning groups run up against this. He said, wouldn't it be great if there's a webcomics association for bargaining agreements together for the common good? And this one, I think, is a common misconception that artists can run bargaining agreements as a unit. The unfortunate truth is that the Writers Guild can bargain as a unit. The Screen Actors Guild can bargain as a unit. But I have yet to hear of a cartooning group that can bargain as a unit without being accused of price fixing. And Brad, do you remember the legalities of that?
To be honest with you, I do not. However, I think the problem goes even deeper than that, and that is you'll never ever get anything like that to work because as soon as you get even 90% of your artists together to bargain as a unit, there's always going to be that 10% that is going to be more than willing to undercut them and destroy anything that the group is trying to put together. And I'm not putting a value judgment on that. I'm not saying that's good or bad, but I'm saying in terms of trying to build a union, as it were, you have to have 100% of the major players on board on something like that, or else it's never going to take off. And you're just never going to get those people to agree on things like pricing and ethical guidelines and stuff like that.
Right.
But no, to answer your question, I don't remember what the legalities towards price fixing were.
And it's bumming me out, especially in light of this conversation, that I don't remember why actors and writers and directors could band together for trade pack agreements, but artists and illustrators couldn't. God, it really bugs me that I can't remember why. It had something to do with. It's along the lines of price fixing, and I don't remember why there's a differentiation between actors, writers, directors, and then cartoonists. So that is something I'm going to have to research and then come back to the next week's show. But I think, Lou, to answer your question, that's part of the reason why, for example, the National Cartoonist Society has never been able to up the rates of syndicated cartoons since 1975 because they are not allowed to dictate the rates to their syndicate, nor is the syndicate allowed to dictate the rates to newspapers, I believe.
Well, now your first step was right. Although I've got to believe the syndicates are running a business. They're offering a product for sale to newspapers. If the syndicates wanted to say that next week, is going to be $75 a week as opposed to $60, and I don't know what Blondie costs. But they are able to control the pricing of their product. Mm-hmm. Now, if Universal Press Syndicate and King's Feature Syndicate got together and decided across the board they're all going to raise the prices of their comics by 50%. Now you're talking about something that might get them into trouble.
Right. Boy, I am really I'm caught off my off foot on this one.
No, you guys,
that,
I have absolutely no input whatsoever. So I'm caught off guard more than anybody, I think.
So you're right, Brad. It becomes a price fixing problem when two or more corporations start to fix prices together. But I don't remember why it was that independent cartoonists, and this is what's bugging me, why independent cartoonists couldn't band together to set prices. It must be something along the same lines, and I'm just not remembering why. But there's a reason why National Cartoonist Society and the Graphic Artists Guild and are never allowed to set prices. They can suggest prices, but they're never allowed to set prices. But anyway, so Lou, to answer your question, a couple different points. Brad made the excellent point that it's like herding cats. I don't know that you could ever get cartoonists, especially web cartoonists, who are more independent minded, to form a trade organization. And then Chris made the good point that you know what would it benefit? You know, being independent. The nice thing is though is that as you guys probably know, all over the web there are 10,000 forums for cartoonists of all stripes to get together and talk, and that essentially forms what would have traditionally been a trade association. You know, it's shop talk online constantly all the time.
That's true.
Well, right. In that respect, what we do, you know, what happens on webcomics.com and other forums like, you know, the Half Pixel forums and right on down the line, the communication that goes through there is crucial to us as working professionals, because what the publishers and the people who hold the purse strings are not counting on us, or even down to like t-shirt vendors and silk screeners and stuff like that, what they're not counting on is us all talking to each other and sharing information and saying, you know what, I found out you can get, you know, silk screening done at very affordably over at this one particular place, and they're able to do it for this particular price. And then you can go back to your silk screener and say, hey, you know what, I'm getting this other price, you know, can you meet it or beat it? The more we talk, the more we share information back and forth, the stronger we are as a group. And we don't have to have anything solidified. We don't have to have a mission statement, right, a banner, a building to stand in, or anything else. All we have to do is, the more we're sharing information, and if you notice, I don't know that I've ever been involved in something that has been like this to this degree, but cartoonists on the web, men and women that do what we do, are incredibly open about their so-called trade secrets and what they're doing in their business. You could write just about any one of us or any one of your favorite web cartoonists and say, hey, how do you handle running a store to sell your books? And I guarantee you, 9 chances out of 10, you're going to get a very thoughtful, informative answer.
Yeah.
Maybe 6 times out of 10.
Yeah, you might not. Yeah, but you're going to get answered a whole lot more than any other profession where you're asking somebody to basically open up their business secrets to you.
Yeah, I actually agree with you, Brad. I think that the vast majority of web cartoonists that I know who are either making it their full living or part-time living are very open, for at least with people for whom they view as professionals and people who have put in the time and effort and, you know, to make the data exchange with. But it's what I find more interesting is the occasional cartoonist, and I'm thinking of one in particular. I won't say his name, but I always find it interesting when someone's like, "Don't give out the information. You'll let people know how we do it, how we make our living." And my thinking is, there really is not a limited pool of English-speaking people that will read and pay for webcomics online. There's still millions, if not tens of millions, of yet untapped audience members in the United States alone, never mind in Canada, Australia, UK, you know, Hong Kong. The audience is still growing and still has massive amounts to go. So I'm not at all hesitant to share what I know, with the thought and expectations that other people will share some tidbit that might save my ass, quite frankly, some 2 years from now, you know.
Well, that's exactly what I was going to say. There's something elitist about that I really don't like. And when you share your information with somebody who's coming at this with a new set of eyes, you might just find out that they bring something to it that you hadn't thought of.
Yeah.
And you might be the beneficiary.
Yeah, in fact, I find that to be the case more often than not. You know, I was just telling somebody the other day how I put together my books, and they're like, oh, well, there's a much quicker way to do that. And they took me through it real quick on IM, and I was like, wow. I never would have arrived to that, and so you know, That free exchange of information, I think, is a nice hallmark of artists who are figuring out this new business model, and it's been a nice one to see. Right, Chatty Cathy, over there in Dallas?
The place I actually thought that you were going to take the conversation was that that somehow artists are incapable of representing themselves adequately, because they immediately, we talked about it in the book where somebody comes to you and you go, hey, we like your stuff, we're willing to give you a half a penny on the dollar for, and they go, oh, yes, I'm validated.
Right.
So, it's a larger conversation that I had with, who was it recently? I think I was talking to David Malky about it. But the idea that, I guess I touched on it with the award stuff, is that there's a diminishing return for the more successful you are to come back and offer assistance or run something or put time and effort into something that is not your product. And the idea that what we had defined it as is, we have this thing that's called webcomics, and the truly successful webcomics have been taken up by other media or have been discovered by new audiences who do not define them as webcomics. Like Penny Arcade, for example, any newspaper you see a write-up about Penny Arcade says it's a website that has comics and essays about video games,
right.
Mm-hmm. So they've left that sphere, and now they are something entirely different, their own package.
Right, and no one has this preconceived notion of a webcomic attached to it.
Well, to be honest, there's probably a much greater audience for all of us possible among readers for whom the word webcomics wouldn't even exist,
Yes.
For Brad, the audience is clearly much larger in people that read comic books and or at least are aware of comic books at some point in their life. And for Chris, the massive sci-fi fans for Starslip, or the massive of music or studio folks for F Chords. But I mean, you get where I'm going with these. None of these groups are people for whom they would gravitate towards, self-identifying as a webcomics reader. There's something else, and this just happens to be a strip online that appeals to that niche or that love of theirs,
Right.
And that I think that I think is where what I meant before when I was saying there's still tens of millions of as yet untapped readers is that we're still on the cutting edge of people finding their daily comics entertainment online. I would give my left foot for the daily newspaper reading audience of Love Is for Sheldon. Because I can guarantee you that it's hundreds of thousands of people more than read Sheldon online. There's still so many people that have never read a comic strip online or a comic book or a graphic novel page online. That there's really a lot of growth potential there, I think.
Yeah.
So I guess basically our answer to Lou is this webcomics group ever going to take hold? And the answer is no, and moreover, it's probably just as well that it doesn't.
Yeah, my personal feeling is what will happen is that in the next 5 to 10 years, you'll have the older generations of NCS members start to pass on, and you'll have more and more webcomics people joining the NCS. I think that's the way it's going to go down. And right now there's friction, but I think in 5 to 10 years there will be a very different world, both in print and online, and I think it will be less confrontational for a lot of cartoonists.
Yeah.
So that's my own take
on
that.
So be patient, I guess, is the...
No, I mean... no, I mean, Brad is already a member of the NCS, aren't you, Brad?
That's true.
And I've been to a couple Rubens, although I haven't joined the NCS. So it's not like it's not a welcoming place to cartoonists. Both Brad and I have found a welcome there. And I just don't find that... For me, having gone to a few meetings, that it serves much of a purpose in my life right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if I didn't go to comics conventions and I wanted to see you guys, once a year at least, I would probably be an NCS permanent member.
Yeah,
if
right.
that makes sense. I think when you're older and your kids are going off to college and you haven't gone to conventions forever, that seems like the time in life as a cartoonist that you want to join the NCS because you want to go see your buddies Brad Geiger and Chris Straub.
Yeah, I think it serves a social need more than Well, not more than anything else, but I think a lot of it is social.
Yeah, I personally think a lot of it is social. You know, there's the occasional Wacom demonstration at an NCS meeting or this or that, but you know, I can get that online or through.
You don't have to buy a table. Is the point? It's when your priority has shifted.
Right. 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 When I'm buying my you know rocket powered gold car with my, my strip money, if that's what you're saying, Chris.
Exactly.
All right, so Brad, you had a point, not from a question, but one that you wanted to bring up for conversational purposes. What was?
Well, yeah, if we want it since Halloween was just this past weekend, you know, it seems like over the last 8 years or so that I've been following webcomics, at least since 2000, 2001, 2002, in there, Halloween was really a really big shared experience time for web cartoonists. We had Fright Night. We had Keen. There was Hollow Keen. It seemed like every collective, every group, everybody would break into groups and do a major Halloween storyline or an arc. And this year, it really hasn't happened. Halloween kind of was given a miss by web cartooning, at least as far as my perspective, unless I miss something. The question is that I'd like to pose to you guys is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? And why do you think it was that we missed Halloween this year?
It might be just a changing of you remember how recently they actually, it was either at Fleen or somewhere like that, where they were talking about, are we past the collective now? You know? Because it seemed like there was suddenly a lot of collectives, but there weren't that many that were well known, and they certainly had gotten smaller in the number of members that each one of them had. And I've completely forgotten the context of this, so I'm going to talk about baking for a minute.
I had a conversation with my grandfather, and that's why when General Sherman forward, whoa!
I remember when this was all farms.
And I hope that answers your question. No, but I think that priorities have changed, and that people might be saying, "Well, look, I'm going to focus on what I've got," and that might be just a general. I mean, is it possible for webcomics to go through a cultural shift like that, where the priority for the cartoonist is themselves?
Can I? Yeah,
yes and no. Well, go ahead, Dave.
Well, here's my take on it, and Brad, you might be the exception to the rule on this, but I think web cartooning from maybe say 5-10 years ago to now went from cartoonists in their teens and 20s to business-minded late 20s, mid-30s, early 40s cartoonists working online, you know? And that just the advance in years for those cartoonists and the you know, ever-increasing level of professionalism, like Chris was saying, it becomes a little bit more, all right, rather than doing this, you know, self-contained storyline for whatever, Hollow Keen or something, instead, I'm going to work on producing my next 4 T-shirts or getting that next book out or, you know, redoing my website. Because it's just a smidge more professionalism and self-serving. Not self-serving in a bad way. Self-serving in a purely professional way, you know, that you have to handle your business kind of outlook.
So let me play devil's advocate. If that's the case, how come things such as 24-Hour Comics Day hasn't also been on the decline? If anything, 24-Hour Comics Day has gotten more popular.
Oh, I can answer that one. I think, A, because it's bigger and broader than just webcomics, and B, and because on the rare occasions where I have done 24-Hour Comics Day, for me, even that was self-serving because it got me ahead on my buffer.
Mm-hmm. Brad, are you talking about the 24-Hour Comics Day where people work on their stuff? Or the ones where you actually do a brand new 24-page, you know,
story.
Yeah, a self-contained thing.
Well, to be honest, I didn't know there was I didn't know there were any of those rules. I just thought the rule for 24-Hour Comics Day was you worked on a comic for 24 hours.
I think the original way it was Scott McCloud that came up with it, right?
Yeah.
Right.
I think the original way, and we're probably going to get an email for this. I think the original way he set it up was that you had to produce a 24-page story in 24 hours, wasn't it, Chris?
Yeah, I think it was supposed to be a self-contained piece, and I mean, a lot of people took that and went and got ahead on their buffer, which is the way I would use it. But Well, what I'm trying to say is that that kind of thing where you're having to come up with a new self-contained piece that will not help your existing stuff, I could see that on the decline in the same way that you would not want to be held to some constraint. Like, now you have to do a Halloween story, and it's got to be at the beach, you know, and it's like, well, all right, I can do that or I can do something else. that sounded needlessly cruel for some reason.
But it actually sounded appropriate to what a lot of those things are. Okay, but the zombie has to be purple. All right, I guess I don't want to be involved anymore.
You guys have fun with that. And
but, you know, I think my own take on that, Brad, is that a lot of that stuff, when it was done even then for self-serving reasons, because there was probably a lot of link exchanging going on.
Sure.
You know, like, check out everybody that's doing the Halloween thingy. And I think now most people link to what they like or link to notable things, and that's about that. Could it
be, though, that with the cartoonists growing older and their priorities changing, that maybe in the same way that they're focusing on their own stuff, maybe they're also seeing the relative uselessness of a link exchange? You know what I mean?
That's a really good point. In other words, what you're saying is you at this point, you know that you've got – if you've got a choice between a link in a Fright Night-style jam comic that's going to be up and people are going to look at it for a day, or having your work to the point that one of your notable peers is going to mention it in his or her blog – with a link.
Right. It's the question...
Between those two, which would you take?
Yeah, it's the question of trying to go for an audience that's currently outside of your existing audience, and the idea that if you have a certain number of audience and you're all by yourself, and then you have a link exchange with five other guys, well, now you're all sharing that same audience, and so your audience, your own audience has grown, but it's kind of a more watered-down audience that has allegiance to five strips, or worse, 20, you know.
Right. And you're gonna get a lot more solid traffic if, instead of just a plain link exchange, somebody's sending you over with a referral from their blog or from their site.
Exactly, that might have a little review or some opinion with it, instead of just visit these 20 guys.
And the best way to do that is just make your comic as good as you possibly can do it, because there's no way you can even request such a thing, because anybody will give you a link on a request if you wear them down, but to really give you a referral from their blog, you've got it. There's only one way to do that, and that's just be the best cartoonist you possibly can be.
Gentlemen, let me posit something terrifying to you, okay? And I invite our listeners to send emails to www@halfpixel.com with their responses. But could it be that those type of events, while we have not noticed them, they're actually under our radar, and that they are the same number, if not more? Because I am sure that stuff is going on, but we have not been watching out for it and have not been excited about it as maybe we were 5 years ago.
Well, that's very possible.
In other words, there might have
been a Fright Night and just none of us knew it happened.
Well, I know that Fright Night, for example, had like organizational problems, and that stuff happens. But, you know, I have no...
You know what, Chris? I bet you're right, because I bet you there... Because when we did it back in the day, it was like, I have 1,000 readers. I want to get to 1,100 readers. What can I do? I'm going to do this Fright Night thing. And I'm sure there are people out there that are still doing... You know, it's just that we haven't seen them... personally, or seen that event personally. You're probably right. I'm sure that stuff goes on all the time in, you know, every...
So are we out of touch, Dave?
Yes. Are we old men? Yes. To answer your question.
Well, has any of you tried to Google Halloween and webcomics?
No, and you know what I'm going to do right now?
No, I'm not. Brad, I don't even know how to Google anymore. Have people stopped Googling? That was my follow-up question. How do I search for things on the web?
How do I make the Google?
How do I make the Google?
Wow.
How do I... I want to find the question man on the Webertrons.
I'm looking to see here on Google, and it doesn't really look like there's anything stand out in terms of a like a Halloween
that,
project.
Whenever we make that joke, I always think of Scotty going, "Computer, computer."
Hello, computer.
Hello, computer.
That, yeah. There's nothing here.
I got the low sotto voce Brad laugh. And now I build it into the crescendo. That was nice. Thank you.
You're conducting him.
I'm playing Brad like a fiddle. Brad, I shall meet you at the crossroads, and we shall outplay the devil in laughter.
Who would the devil bring?
The devil brings the guy with the voices from Police Academy.
How terrible is it that that guy, as talented as he is known as that guy with the voices from Police Academy?
That's a gig.
I think.
As bad as this is going to sound, and I mean this with utmost respect, it's as bad as us as constantly referring to Brandon as that ex-KCD guy.
Oh, Randall.
Randall. Well, you know what?
What did I say, Brandon?
Brad, that's why we refer to him that way, because some of us are doofuses and don't know his name. Well,
no, but like...
I was trying to pay him a compliment.
Good work, Brad.
Both of them are incredibly talented guys, but yet I constantly always refer to him as that XKCD guy, or unless I'm using the incorrect name.
No, you got it right. I mean, but like... Consider again our friend Michael Winslow, the voice guy from the Police Academy films. Don't you think, though, that that's the only role he ever had where they said, you know what, you just run with this? I think somebody must have seen his stand-up and said, I want him in my Police Academy movie.
Yeah, because there's no potential way that some screenwriter was like, all right, then we got submarine noises, then jet scream, then donkey, then, you know what I mean? You're reading the script, it's like, how do we find this guy? And then someone stumbles on Winslow, and they're like, wow, you're perfect for what we got.
They go to some deli in Los Angeles, and there's this guy making dribbly noises into his chicken soup, and they think, hey, wait a minute.
This guy's got the chops.
Kid, you're going to be in pictures. And he's got the little stubby cigar. You got a terrible face, but you got a voice of the angels. You know Michael J. Fox, let's put it that way. You know the only reason I said that? I think, if I'm not wrong, Michael J. Fox was actually discovered somewhere like that.
Huh.
Is that right?
That's why I brought up Michael J. Fox. I think. Now watch, someone's going to email me. Dear David, you are so wrong about Michael J. Fox. Also, Sherlock Holmes did not love, not, you know, anyway.
Yes, also Sherlock Holmes was a heroin addict, not a cocaine addict.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to get something like that. Dear David, you have once again shown your ignorance too strongly for your audience.
How many letters do you get from that guy?
Sadly, they're all my brother. Dear David, once again I write to you. Your education has failed you.
I didn't know your brother was Phil Silvers. That is right, sir.
Ooh.
I couldn't help but notice that you had a little something on your chest.
Brad, you have not met my extended family, clearly.
Yeah, you guys sound like Bullwinkle, not like Phil Silvers.
No. Bullwinkle is, hold on, let me think.
He's lower.
Hey, Rocky, oh, boy, I can't.
No, I want to hear the Geiger version. Voices. The heck with my version. I want to hear the Geiger version.
Hey, Rocky, watch me pull this rabbit out of my head.
There you go, that's pretty good.
That was the Cowardly Lion.
I was going to sound, that sounded like, now I forgot, Willard Scott as Ronald McDonald. That's what that sounded like.
I was going to go with Barry Frank, the senator from
Barney Frank.
Barney Frank. What did I say? Barry Frank. I think that Barry Frank is a jazz musician.
You know what? Clearly, we only are allowed to refer to people by their handles and not by their actual name, by their job, followed by guy.
Oh, my wife is going to be so upset when she hears this podcast. I besmirched the name of her favorite web cartoonist.
Well, don't let him find out.
You didn't talk bad about me. Brad, you didn't.
Awkward laughter.
You didn't talk bad about me. Don't worry about it.
No, you know, after she saw you in that Princess Leah outfit, I think you fell down a couple notches.
Oh, really? Oh, that's a shame.
No, not really, not really.
I tell you what, I was. I think that type of humor did not go over well with my neighbors. I'll just leave it at that.
Really?
Yeah, a lot of people. There's a lot of older people around me, and they're like, "Oh, you're some sort of woman."
Well, I told you I was kind of in the same boat. We had a bunch of five and 6 and 7 year olds coming over for Halloween. A bunch of my son's friends from school. And so I really decorated up the porch big. I had a ghost that was motion detector activated that would float up and down, had a black light over top of it, and a spider that would come down on a thread, and bats and lights and blinking skeletons and all this stuff, and a gargoyle that came out of a crypt. And I told my wife one morning, "Hey, take a look at this." I was going out to get the mail. I said, "Take a look at this. I won Best Neighborhood Halloween Award." She says, "You did?" I said, "No, not really. Somebody put a religious tract in our front door." I figure I won the award for tackiest display.
Brad, you don't need to stoop to that level. I will give you an award. You deserve,
you know what, Brad,
better.
I'm sure there's some sort of webcomics award for that online somewhere for best Halloween decoration by a web cartoonist.
And if there is, by golly, I'm going to try and win.
I was trying to bring that full circle and apparently did not do a very good job.
Well, I think that was the award that gave the WCCAs all that trouble that last time. They just could not decide.
That's what finally dismantled them.
Well, what do you say, gents? Is that enough chit-chat for this week?
I think we've wrestled this one to the ground.
We definitely wrestled something to the ground. I don't know.
I like the idea that each week it's something that we have to best, that we have to put down.
It's like this week it's a Kodiak bear of a podcast.
Right. It's something that we collectively have to put our arms around its neck until it suffocates.
Conversationally, of course.
Yes. Well, hopefully. I guess it depends on what week it is, I guess.
I guess, well, yeah. It's Day of the Dead.
All right.
Well.
Webcomics Weekly.
Webcomics Weekly. Rest well.
Rest well, episode whatever number you are. Rest well.